Yeah, what's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Dave DeForest reporting. Search teams in the Mediterranean are looking for the wreckage of the Egyptair jet that crashed into the sea Thursday. The plane with 66 people on board was approaching Cairo on a flight from Paris when it disappeared from radar. Egyptian officials say terrorism is a possible cause of the crash, but aviation experts are warning against speculation, saying it's too soon to draw conclusions. Authorities say that so far they have not confirmed finding any debris from the plane. The Nigerian army says a second schoolgirl kidnapped by Boko Haram militants more than 2 years ago on a raid on their school has been rescued. The first of the Chibok girls to be rescued from Boko Haram appeared before journalists in the Nigerian capital Abuja on Thursday. Amina Ali said nothing during the news conference, sitting slumped in a chair. She was greeted by Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari and other high officials. Taiwan has a new president. Tsai Ing-wen was inaugurated Friday in Taipei as the nation's first female president. Ms. Tsai faces an economy that has fallen into a recession as exports have dropped. China is demanding the U.S. cease close surveillance along the country's coast following what the Pentagon described as an unsafe encounter between two Chinese fighter jets and one U.S. military plane. The Pentagon said the two Chinese jets intercepted a U.S. reconnaissance plane on a routine patrol Tuesday in international airspace over the South China Sea. A Chinese foreign ministry spokesman denies the Pentagon's version of what happened, saying the Chinese planes kept a safe distance and did not make any dangerous actions. This is VOA News. The shooting of a black suspect by a San Francisco police officer has led to the resignation of the city's police chief. Mayor Ed Lee asked Chief Greg Schur to step down hours after an officer fatally shot a black woman driving a stolen car. Pressure had been mounting for the chief's resignation since a similar incident in December and disclosure of racist emails by several officers. The U.S. will attend France-sponsored talks next month in Paris on renewing the Israeli-Palestinian peace process. Secretary of State John Kerry told reporters at NATO headquarters in Brussels Thursday that he will attend the talks.
We work together on these things. This is not just a U.S. enterprise, never has been. We play a very significant role, yes, because we have a very special and close relationship and have through the years with Israel. And everybody in the world understands that.
Kerry said restarting the peace process, or at least keeping a path open to do so, remains a U.S. priority. The United States and three key European allies, Britain, France, and Germany, say they want to eliminate any confusion about what investment and business arrangements with Iran are permitted after the recent nuclear agreement. The U.S. and European Union lifted most sanctions on Iran in January after Iran agreed to curb its nuclear program. But some sanctions remain, including those related to human rights and terrorism issues. The State Department said Thursday businesses confused about what is and what is not allowed are encouraged to approach the governments with their questions rather than forego business opportunities. Roadside bombs have killed 11 civilians and a top army commander in Afghanistan. A local official says the civilian casualties occurred late Thursday when a vehicle carrying the victims of an earlier explosion hit an improvised explosives device. Democratic presidential frontrunner Hillary Clinton has labeled presumptive Republican nominee Donald Trump divisive and dangerous. Clinton made some of her most scathing criticisms of Trump yet in an interview Thursday on CNN. Clinton pointed to Trump's criticism of British politicians, his willingness to speak with North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un, his call for the United States to back away from the NATO military alliance, and his assertion that more countries should have nuclear weapons. She said those positions add up to what she called a very troubling picture that disqualifies Trump from being president. American journalist Maury Safer has died at the age of 84. For 46 years, Safer was a fixture on the U.S. television news program 60 Minutes on CBS. His death came just days after he retired from the network. In Washington, I'm Dave DeForest.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, May 20th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The search for Egypt Air 804 continues after initial reports that the plane's wreckage had been found turned out to be false.
The United States is providing assistance in the search effort, and relevant authorities are doing everything they can to try to find out what the facts are of what happened today.
That's U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry. We'll have a report on Egypt's military operations against the Islamic State in Sinai. Sudan asked the U.S. for a visa for President Bashir to attend this year's General Assembly in New York. African Union Rights Commission urges greater freedoms in Zimbabwe. And the Chibok girl rescued this week has met with President Buhari.
We can ensure that she gets the best medical, psychological, emotional, and whatever other care she requires to make a full recovery and be integrated into the society.
That's Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari. Zambia's opposition groups are displeased with a Dubai-based company being awarded the contract to print the ballots for the August presidential election. And a new report says no one has been held responsible for sexual violence in South Sudan. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The search for Egypt Air 804 continues after initial reports that the plane's wreckage had been found turned out to be false. The jet is believed to have crashed into the Mediterranean Sea as it approached Cairo on a flight from Paris. Egypt says terrorism is a more likely cause of the disaster. Secretary of State John Kerry offers U.S. condolences and said the United States is providing assistance in the search effort.
I want to express my condolences to Egypt and to all other countries impacted by the disappearance earlier this morning of the Egypt Air flight over the Mediterranean. The United States is providing assistance in the search effort, and relevant authorities are doing everything they can to try to find out what the facts are of what happened today. I have no more knowledge than others at this point with respect to those facts, but we certainly extend our condolences to each and every country that has lost people, and particularly to Egypt, which has made so many efforts in recent months to break out of and away from the last events. And so no matter what... our thoughts are with them and with all the passengers.
That's U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry speaking Thursday at NATO headquarters in Brussels. The top U.S. general says Egypt's military is carrying out operations against Islamic State fighters in the Sinai Peninsula. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb has more from Kings Bay Naval Submarine Base in Georgia, the latest stop as she travels with U.S. Joint Chiefs Chairman General Joe Dunford.
As many Egyptians grieve the loss of life from a crashed Egypt airplane that Egypt's government says is likely due to terrorism, Egypt's military is taking the fight to Islamic State militants in the Sinai Peninsula. General Joe Dunford updated reporters traveling with him across the Atlantic Thursday.
I understand, and I don't have any details right now, that there's actually operations against them ongoing right now by the Egyptians. So we'll be looking forward to hearing the results of operations that are ongoing.
Dunford did not provide further details on the mission. The U.S. estimates there are up to about 1,000 Islamic State fighters in the Sinai. Dunford said the militants are getting a boost from a sizable Bedouin insurgency that is cooperating with them. While the Sinai is an isolated territory, flanked by Egypt's military on one side and Israel's military on the other, Islamic State fighters there are reaching out across the Middle East.
We have seen a connection between the Islamic State and the Sinai in Raqqa. We have seen, you know, communication between the Islamic State and the Sinai and the Islamic State in Libya and elsewhere. So we're watching that pretty closely.
Navy Captain Greg Hicks, a spokesman for General Dunford, said the Egyptian operations against IS in the Sinai are not related to the downed Egyptian plane. Islamic State militants in the Sinai claimed responsibility for a Russian passenger plane that crashed last year after taking off from an Egyptian Red Sea resort, killing everyone on board. Carla Babb, VOA News, Kings Bay, Georgia.
The first of the Chibok girls rescued from Nigeria's Boko Haram militants appeared before journalists in the capital Abuja on Thursday. VOA's Chris Stein was there and has this report.
Amina Ali arrived with her mother, her crying infant, and a nurse at the Aso Rock Presidential Villa Thursday afternoon. She was greeted by governors, cabinet ministers, Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari, and dozens of camera-wielding journalists. Ali said nothing during the news conference that followed, sitting slumped in a chair while a nurse held her baby. Buhari vowed the government will take care of Ali.
We make sure that she gets the best medical, psychological, emotional, and whatever other care she requires to make a full recovery and be integrated fully into the society.
Boko Haram militants abducted Ali and the other schoolgirls from the northeastern town of Chibok a little more than 2 years ago. Activists have been calling for Nigeria's government to rescue the schoolgirls ever since. Thus far, Ali is the only one of the girls who has returned to society. Kashim Shettima, governor of Borno State, where Chibok is located, confirmed that Ali was found in a village near the town of Damboa by the civilian JTF, a vigilante group set up to help the military fight Boko Haram. Shettima said Ali's recovery was a sign of good things to come.
218 girls are still unaccounted for, but the journey of 1,000 miles starts with a single step, and the recovery of Amina Ali is a good omen.
It's likely that not all of the schoolgirls will be rescued. Ali has told villagers that 6 of her classmates died in captivity. Chris Stein for VOA News, Abuja.
The Sudan government says it hopes the Obama administration will grant a visa to President Omar al-Bashir to attend this year's United Nations General Assembly in New York. Information Minister Ahmed Bilal says President Bashir has been invited by UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon to attend the General Assembly in September. Mr. Bashir has been indicted by the International Criminal Court, the ICC, for war crimes he allegedly committed in Sudan's Darfur region. Last week, President Bashir attended the 5th inauguration of Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni in Kampala. The U.S. delegation walked out after President Museveni called the ICC a bunch of useless people and said he no longer supports the court. Bilal accused the ICC of double standard and of being a court only for Africans. He says the U.S. is obligated as host of the United Nations to grant a visa to President Bashir.
In fact, actually, last time he applied for the visa but was not granted the visa. But now he got an invitation. We don't know whether he's going to be granted the visa or not, but he applied for it. And we think that he should be granted the visa because the United States is the hosting the international organizations, and we have to attend the activities of this organization. We shouldn't be prohibited for any reason. And that's why our president applied. This is the second time. And we think it is very fair to be granted the visa. If he's been granted the visa, he will come.
It was just last week that your president went to Uganda to attend President Museveni's inauguration. Some countries feel that Uganda, as a signatory to the ICC, should have arrested your president because, as you know, there's an ICC warrant for his arrest.
In fact, actually, we think that this very badly reputed ICC is now very well understood by all the Africans. It is a court for the black people, not for the white people, because the measures being taken by the ICC, it is double standard, and it is made specifically towards the African leaders. We don't care about the ICC anymore, because now there is almost 90% or even more from the African leaders against the ICC.
Do you think the United States will have the legal authority, the power to arrest your president when he comes to the United Nations?
Absolutely no, because the USA is not a partner in the ICC. They didn't sign, and they are not actually complying to the rules of the ICC. Like Sudan, we didn't sign. And America is exempted. American, soldiers and these are exempted because of the veto from the ICC laws. It is only the weak, it is only the blacks who are now being called and indicted because America is not signing. Uganda signed the Roma document, but America no. So for the America, there is no embarrassment whether they can arrest the president of Uganda. So I don't think he is not coming to visit America. He came for the international organization, UN.
Mr. Minister, do you think your president is coming to the United Nations to test the whole idea that the U.S. is a signatory but that has not ratified the Rome Statute?
In fact, not only testing, this is our right. Our right, actually, to attend the activities of the U.N. because we are a member in the U.N. And America should not at all speak about arresting the president because they are not a member. And even they are a member. The president is not coming for America. He's coming for the U.N. And if they did this, this is, will ruin the whole idea about the non-alignment of all countries in the world.
Ahmed Bilal, Sudan's information minister, he was speaking with me from the capital, Khartoum. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, May 20th. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Let's give a shout out to listeners on our VOA affiliate station, Rush FM in Bamenda, Cameroon, Radio Hot Cocoa also in Bamenda, Cameroon, and Diamond FM in Tamale, Ghana. Daybreak Africa program is 16 and a half minutes past the hour. Two South Sudanese human rights groups say no one is being held responsible for the wave of rapes and other sexual crimes seen in South Sudan since the country's conflict began in late 2013. VOA's Jill Craig files from Nairobi with additional reporting from Juba by Jason Pantinki.
Annette is a first responder helping rape victims among women sheltering at a UN base in Juba, the South Sudanese capital. Annette, who prefers to be identified by first name only, says the number of rape cases each month has skyrocketed since 2013.
Before, it used to happen, but it wasn't so rampant like that. Cases would come, but in a month you'd find that only one, two, or even none. You know? But now again, like for this period, it has increased. A month, I would say an average of 30 to 40.
Annette's experience is a reflection of the sexual and gender-based violence taking place across the country. And according to Legal Action Worldwide and the South Sudan Law Society, members of security or militia groups are responsible for much of the violence. David Ding is the research director of the South Sudan Law Society.
I think evidence points to its use as a way of punishing communities, so collective punishment. And this is on all sides, you know, whether communities feel as though they're doing it to defend the rights of their communities or sort of as a more proactive punishment.
The South Sudan Law Society and Legal Action Worldwide released a report on sexual violence in South Sudan Thursday in Nairobi. The report says government and rebel forces, militias aligned to both sides, and unidentified uniformed men are reported to have committed rape, gang rape, murder, abduction, sexual assault, stripping, sexual slavery, castration, and forced abortion. Men, women, and children have all been victimized, particularly in Unity State, although women and girls are most at risk. Another group, the South Sudan Protection Cluster, says there were 1,300 rapes and 1,600 abductions of women and children between April and September of 2015. But verifying this number and figures released by other organizations is problematic, says Deng.
We don't even have any information on the basis of this figure. You know, it's just these figures which are seemingly pulled out of thin air, and there's no really way to assess the credibility of them.
South Sudan lacks a formal justice system that is accessible to the wider population. Traditional justice systems may function in conflict zones, but they are ill-equipped to handle sexual violence cases, which are often perceived as communal and not individual issues. To seek accountability from the perpetrators, the report's authors recommend legal and institutional reforms, proper vetting of security forces, and a means for the survivors to seek justice, such as through the formation of a hybrid court capable of trying war crimes. They also urge the drafting and passage of a sexual and gender-based violence bill. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
Zambia's opposition parties have denounced the choice of a Dubai-based company to print election ballots and suggested that corruption and plans for vote rigging played a key role. The parties reacted after Zambia's Electoral Commission announced Al Ghurair Printing and Publishing had won the contract to print the ballots that will be used in the August 11th general election. Jack Muibu, head of legal affairs for the United Party for National Development, the UPND, accused the Electoral Commission of trying to rig the polls for the governing Patriotic Front Party.
I'm aware that most of the major opposition political parties in Zambia and other major stakeholders have expressed their disquiet pertaining to the awarding of the tender to a Dubai-based company. You have to note that all the immediate previous elections, ballot papers were being printed in South Africa, and there's never been any complaint by any stakeholders. We are, however, surprised to note that suddenly the Dubai company has been awarded this particular tender, despite the fact that the Dubai-based company is not the most competitive in terms of pricing.
The Electoral Commission chairman has categorically stated that stakeholders, including the UPND, failed to prove that the Dubai-based company is incompetent to win this tender.
Stakeholders have expressed their concern. You are aware that Zambia is undergoing severe economic and financial stress. The Zambian government has no capacity to pay particular bid. They are relying on donors. And the donors have also expressed their disquiet. We are aware of the concerns the Ugandans expressed pertaining to this particular company. And we have been asking the Electoral Commission to convince us as to why they have opted to go and have the ballot papers printed in Dubai at an exorbitant price, taking into account the financial stress the country is going through.
You accuse the Electoral Commission that by doing so, the Electoral Commission of Zambia is facilitating the rigging of the election by President Edgar Lungu and his ruling Patriotic Front Party. That accusation, some Zambians are saying, unjustified and could create doubt within the minds of people about the credibility of the election. Why such a move of accusation?
Well, as I indicated, we are alive to the speculations and accusations that are flowing in the Zambian social media pertaining to this particular company. Hence, our expression of doubt of having a free and fair election. There are accusations that have been made against this company pertaining to the printing and the fraudulent elections that have been held in other countries where they have been involved. And as a result, and as a stakeholder, we have expressed our concern, not only because of this issue, but even the issue of cost, which is affecting us as taxpayers and as stakeholders.
You also made reference to the fact that some people are celebrating in the country because the Dubai-based company won this award. Do you have proof of the celebration, or is it just one of those political talk?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, we have recordings of people celebrating pertaining to this award.
Jack Muibu is the head of legal affairs for Zambia's opposition United Party for National Development, the UPND. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Lusaka. The African Union is urging Zimbabwe to repeal laws that curtail the right to freedom of expression, freedom of the media, and other protections. Sebastian Mofu has more from Harare, where the AU Commissioner for Human Rights spoke out.
AU Commissioner for Human Rights Pansi Nhlakhula said she's happy with a constitutional court decision repealing a defamation law that opponents said was being used to stifle journalists. But in an interview, as she wrapped her four-day visit to Zimbabwe on Thursday, Nhlakhula said she wanted to see Zimbabwe repeal or amend more than 400 other laws that still curtail access to information, freedom of expression, and freedom of the media, all of which are enshrined in the country's Bill of Rights.
The full realization of these rights will require vigilance and ensure that the government does not only adopt laws, but that those laws are implemented, and to the extent that those laws are probably inconsistent with the Constitution. I think it's incumbent upon Zimbabweans to ensure that they have constant engagement with the authorities to ensure the repeal of those laws. If that avenue doesn't work, of course, the courts are always an option.
Zimbabwe adopted what Nhlakhula calls a progressive constitution in 2013. But the opposition and activists say the government is cracking down on dissent and denying them the right to demonstrate and express their point of view. Such complaints go back years. In 2002, Zimbabwe enacted a law that makes it illegal to denigrate President Robert Mugabe.
That was Sebastian Mofu reporting from Harare. And it's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Marco Uma in Johannesburg, South Africa. It's very good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports news, we begin with football. Hosts Mauritania play Mali in the opening leg of the second round in the Africa Under-20 Championship qualifiers in Nouakchott today, Friday. Tomorrow, Saturday, defending champions Nigeria tackle Burundi. Mozambique play Lesotho. Tunisia engage Senegal. Burkina Faso meet the Republic of Congo. Namibia face South Africa. Gambia challenge Morocco. Angola encounter Gabon. And Ivory Coast are at home to Guinea. On Sunday, Libya play Benin. Ethiopia engage Ghana, Rwanda host Egypt, and Zimbabwe are at home to Cameroon. In rugby, South Africa play Canada as Kenya face Portugal at the start of their campaign at the final tournament of the 10-leg IRB 7 series this year in the British capital London tomorrow, Saturday. South Africa will also encounter the United States of America and France in other Group A fixtures, while Kenya will play Scotland and Samoa in other Group C matches. Going into the weekend action, South Africa are second on the series standings with 152 points. Kenya is seventh with 95 points, while Zimbabwe is 17th with 1 point. In athletics, the Athletics Federation of Nigeria staged their second Golden League meeting of the year in Sapele, Delta State, South-South Nigeria tomorrow, Saturday. Home-based athletes are vying for the qualifying standards for the Africa Senior Athletics Championships next month, the World Junior Athletics Championships in July, and the Rio de Janeiro Olympics in August. In volleyball, Algeria and Kenya get another chance to qualify for the women's volleyball event at the Rio de Janeiro Olympics during an international contest in San Juan, Puerto Rico. The three-day round-robin contest starting today, Friday, also features Colombia and hosts Puerto Rico. The winner advances to the Olympics. In taekwondo, the two-day Africa Senior Taekwondo Championship starts in Port Said, some 200 kilometers northeast of the Egyptian capital, Cairo, today, Friday. Finally, in chess, over 40 leading chess men and women contestants have converged in the Algerian capital, Algiers, for the two-day International Chess Grandmasters Tournament starting today, Friday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good weekend. We'll see you again on Monday morning. Here's our listener mail for this Friday morning, May 20th.
My name is Edwin Dozon. I'm calling from the United States of America. Called to express disappointment with the postal system in Liberia. Recently, I mailed a package, and I have been tracking the package. The package got in Liberia. They opened the package, demanding $150 from the person that went to receive the package, and they said that the man should give them $20 before they can release the package. The Postmaster General has to know what is going on in the post office. This is a disgrace for our country, and something should be done about it.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. That is it for this Friday, May 20th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Mark Oman, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good weekend.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. Oh, every day and every night, I fall in love with you. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.